Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey everyone, welcome to A Good Football Show. I am Matt Straub. It is Tuesday, March 22nd, and today we are rounding up and reacting to some recent fantasy news, including the return of Lombardi Lenny to Tampa, a new quarterback in Atlanta. It is fine. Everything is totally fine. And changes of address for Robert Woods and Jameson Crowder. That and more coming up as I'm joined by Kyle Dvorak and Denny Carter, who first of all did not get the memo that we're wearing blue t-shirts today. Denny, it's going to be your score is going to be docked immediately for that.
It's awkward because I have a blue t-shirt. It's upstairs along with my other NBC Sports Edge merchandise.
Yeah, to be clear, this isn't just blue t-shirts for the fun of it. We got a little bit of NBC merch sent our way, and that's why they're blue t-shirts. We're not just like huge fans of the color blue.
Well, we are, but are yes, we? But beyond that, I've always enjoyed blue.
I will say it looks good on you guys.
I'm a fan now. I've officially become a fan of blue.
But truly the only thing more awkward than three guys in matching blue shirts is two guys in matching blue shirts, I think. We can safely say. Guys, quickly on a non-football note here, the Oscars are coming up, and we actually have an Oscars competition on the NBC Sports Predictor app, which is why I bring this up. More on that to come in a second, but first things first, let's start the baseline here. I don't think we're operating with a lot of knowledge here about the year in movies. Danny, just for starters, do you know when the Oscars are?
The Oscars are this coming Sunday?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you got it.
He has already infinitely more knowledge than I have.
Yeah, dominating.
If nothing else, I'm plugged into the zeitgeist. Okay. Straight my brain right into the zeitgeist. I get it. I know that the Oscars are this Sunday.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to find out how plugged in you are now, because here's what we're going to do, guys. Before we talk for a second about the actual competition, red carpet pick 'em, I'm going to name the title of Best Picture nominee, the title, and you guys have to tell me what you think the plot is. Now, I should preface this by saying, basically, none of us have seen any of these movies, including me. So the first one, okay, first title is The Power of the Dog. Mm-hmm. Kyle, what is the plot of Best Picture nominee, The Power of the Dog? And we'll take a general description even, we'd be happy.
Power of the Dog. All right, so there's a man, right? Begins, opening shot is a man overlooking the sunset, and he's got a dog. And through a long and arduous journey, he has an ex-wife and kids, and he doesn't really understand the kids, right? He's never really not a bad father, just maybe not the best father he could have been. And he regrets that. And he uses said dog, the power of the dog, to help him reconnect with his kids. And he ends up, he doesn't get back with the wife at the end. You know, that's not, it's not the time for that anymore, but he makes amends with her. And that was the power of the dog all along. But unfortunately, as most dogs movies end with, the dog passes and he has to come to terms with that.
So not having seen this movie either, you're saying it's basically Marley and Me, as far as I can tell. Is that the plot of Marley and Me?
I assume Marley and Me is happy until the end. And this movie is much more emotional because the guy he begins a broken man.
I see.
Kyle, have you considered writing a movie?
Well, I've considered it, and it turns out it's already written, Power of the Dog. I shopped this one around, and like, we already have that script.
It's, I mean, that sounds perfectly feasible. If you would have told me that that's the actual plot, I would have been like, all right.
It is, I assume.
Sounds good.
Denny, do you want to take a shot at The Power of the Dog before I tell you guys what it actually is?
So dog backwards is God.
Okay.
And confirmed. And so we're talking about it's the power of God. This is a very religious movie. We'll go, you know, a man, let's just say a man for now. We'll go with Kyle's idea of a man who's in desperate straits and dire straits, really needs help with his life, and he turns to the dog, who is, turns out, God.
Wow.
There you go.
Denny, have you considered writing a movie? Because that is potentially a goal.
That's like Evan or Bruce Almighty, but instead of having Morgan Freeman as sort of the omnipotent God, there is a dog in this movie, probably also voiced by Morgan Freeman.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Here's what I can tell you guys. You both got correct that there is a man in this movie, okay, and that man is Benedict Cumberbatch. Kirsten Dunst is also in this movie. This movie is set in the Old West. If I'm led to believe what I saw in a trailer, it's 1925 or so.
They had dogs then.
I'm not exactly clear what the plot is from the trailer. Kyle, you might be right about a broken man, but I can tell you, based on what I've seen, there are no dogs in this movie. Not a single dog. There are horses, there are cattle, but no dogs. If you've seen this movie and you saw a dog, okay, fine. But that's not part of the marketing of the movie. No dogs in the trailer. So I'm just saying. Just saying. Okay.
These Hollywood writers have never really stepped foot on grass. They don't really understand, apparently, what even a dog is.
Right. Okay, let's try one more. Okay, Denny, our final one here. What is the plot of the Best Picture nominee, Nightmare Alley?
Nightmare Alley is a prequel, of course, to the Nightmare on Elm Street movies from the 80s, featuring Freddy Krueger. This is the origin story of Freddy Krueger, told in a very serious way, and in a way that really caught the Academy's attention. And I think, you know, that many people will be interested in and maybe urged to go see the original movies after seeing the prequel, which is Nightmare Alley.
Kyle, I just want to say before we get to your guess at this, I like that. First of all, I kind of like the concept. I like where you went with that. But I do like that part of the pitch just kind of became you saying, I think people are going to enjoy seeing this. People are going to be interested in this movie and go see it. That's part of the synopsis.
It's not going to be one of the movies that people aren't interested in. It's going to be a movie that people are interested in. And that, sure, you know, that there's a huge difference between those two things. What you have to do, you have to be kind of an expert on movies to know the difference, you know.
I also like that this is Nightmare on Elm Street prequel, told in a serious way, as though the others are silly romp through just kind of fun family comedies.
Well, they are silly, but this is deadly serious, and it stars Robert Englund, obviously, as reprising his role. It's a tearjerker, mostly.
Okay, Kyle, your best shot at the plot of Nightmare Alley.
All right. Nightmare Alley, as we all know, is not a prequel film. It is actually the beginning of a three-part series, each of which is over 3 hours, which was a bold directorial choice. And it is set in 2097. It is a sci-fi political thriller in which ourselves from the future, that is 3097, 1,000 years later, come back in time to go to war with our 2097 selves. And but it's actually an allegory for the Red Scare, the whole thing. So,
wow. Very Lord of the Rings by that director to go 3 movies, 3+ hours. Okay, I'm going to tell you the synopsis of this because I watched part of the trailer. I haven't seen the movie. Bradley Cooper plays an ambitious carny with a talent for manipulating people. And I don't know about you guys, but I immediately thought Pat Daugherty when I heard that. That was the first.
What? I don't know what part of that sentence is most insulting. Carney manipulated. Like, there are a lot of ways you could have insulted him with that one sentence.
Pat, I'm sorry. It was an easy shot to take without you here today. But that's the synopsis of Nightmare Alley. I'm going to say, I might see both these movies. I have no agenda to promote them, but I did watch a trailer and I'm intrigued by both, even though I don't know what's going on.
You said Bradley Cooper for Nightmare Alley?
Bradley Cooper, yeah.
Is it like maybe like a thriller type movie?
It's a thriller, big time.
Actually,
big
might time watch this. Yeah. Sounds good. I'm in for a dark Bradley Cooper thriller type movie, so I might go watch this.
Yeah, very dark. Possibly even darker than Denny's Nightmare on Elm Street prequel, Nightmare Alley, the real thing.
I told you it's a tearjerker. It's not even, you know, it's dark, but it's also emotional. That's what people don't realize. Unsophisticated people will watch it and realize, oh, this is a scary movie. It's not scary. It's just an emotional heart. Wrenching movie about a man who is killed and has claws for hands.
The scariest part of the movie is when you leave it and have to return to the real world, look yourself in the mirror. That's the scary part, the humanity, but not the knife hands man.
Right. And you realize that in each of us is a little bit of Freddy Krueger.
And this is quickly turning to Edward Scissorhands, I would say, as well, arguably. By the way, the name of the game on the NBC Sports Predictor app is Red Carpet Pick'em. The jackpot is $5,000. And you basically just pick the categories with a question at the end about which movie will have the most wins. So check that out. And don't forget Sunday, E's brunch at the Oscars. Pre-show starts at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, with arrivals on E Live from the Red Carpet at 5 Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. So let's get to the business at hand here, guys. Some recent news found on the NBC Sports Edge player news page powered by RotoWorld and what it means for the upcoming season. We're going to start in Tampa, where Leonard Fournette has signed a three-year, $21 million deal to return to the Bucs. Now, to me, Fournette feels like he's about 35, but turns out he just turned 27 in January. And last year, after a slow start, he really stepped into a workhorse role, a 10-game stretch where he averaged almost 20 touches per game. Danny, can we actually bank on similar volume for Fournette in 2022?
Yeah, I mean, barring injury, we should believe that he has the upside of a top five PPR back, because, and that might be a little conservative. I would say, you know, top is probably top three because, you know, because of the pass catching role out of that backfield, and also very little competition for touches. We know that when a running back gets that full workload in Tom Brady's backfield, it's hard to exaggerate how valuable that can be. And there are more exciting players than Leonard Fournette. I think that we can safely say that. But, you know, thankfully it doesn't really matter if he's exciting. He's going to be catching all the passes. He's going to be getting all the goal line carries in a highly productive offense where the band is all getting back together because Brady came out of retirement. He'll probably be underdrafted if slightly this year.
Yeah, like he's a player that if you were just to sit down and like do projections on a spreadsheet, you're going to get him as a top three back every time. Like you just can't, because as Denny said, like we know Brady throws the running back, Brady offenses get to the red zone so much, and Leonard Fournette is the perfect size, weight, speed combination to just plow into the end zone. And he scored 10 times last year, didn't even play the full season. So you just cannot look at this backfield and say like, well, what are we going to do? Give 40% of the carries to Keyshawn Vaughn? Obviously not. No Ronald Jones, no Giovanni Bernard. Like, there's just no mathematical way you can look at this team knowing how Brady uses the running backs, how many points the Bucs are going to put on the board, and how little competition Leonard Fournette has, and say, like, how can you possibly say he's not a top five back? You only look at his perceived talent, which he has outperformed his perceived talent in back-to-back seasons. The stretch, the playoff Lenny berth was incredible, and then he really followed it up with an incredible almost full season. I think played 14 games last year, also looked great. So even now, our sort of down-on-him talent has kind of been wrong for two straight years. So if you can see the fact, this former first-round running back who was disappointing us with the Jacksonville Jaguars, if that's something you've heard before, maybe there's a trend going on in Jacksonville and not with Leonard Fournette. He could actually be very talented and in the great opportunity. Like, I kind of think I was down on him for a long time, but he's probably going to be underdrafted. Like, it's really hard not to see him as like a top five running back. He could straight up be the RB1.
To the point that you just made, he's had such a strange career because he looked like such a beast in college.
Yeah.
And then he kind of like turned into, at least our perception was, he's kind of a plotter in the pros. And now he's kind of having this late 20s renaissance or breakout or whatever you want to call it. Danny, I mean, I think the theme I heard both of you say is he's going to be underdrafted potentially because we perceive him as a little boring. Mm-hmm. So where should he be drafted as of now, assuming this backfield stays the same, versus where you think he might be drafted?
Well, you know, before he signed in early best ball drafts, I believe he was going in the RB25 territory. And I think a lot of that was the uncertainty that was kind of baked into that ADP. Like, he's visiting the Patriots, maybe some other teams with some holes in the backfield might have given him a lot more money to come. And he probably would have disappointed in those roles just because the situation literally can't be better than it is for him in Tampa. So with that, with his signing, with him signing this 3-year deal, he's going to pop up to, I don't know, RB10 or so, which seems fine. I guess I'd be happy to take him there, but he can outperform that ADP. I think that's the main point of what we're saying, you know, with his workhorse role, and all the valuable touches. Only Austin Ekeler and Najee Harris had more expected points receiving last year than Fournette.
Crazy.
I feel like people are going to be like, yeah, he's like a low-end RB1 because he's Leonard Fournette. I'm sure something goes wrong. And like, something might go wrong. Who knows? Things go wrong with running backs all the time. But like, if you were just to put pencil to paper, like, he will come out as like RB5, 6, 7. And I'd probably be comfortable drafting him there. Like at the top end of the 1-2 turn, well, people will probably take him towards that back end of that. I'd say like, you know, I'd take him 10, 11, 12, and people would probably be looking to take him like middle of the second. Like it feels weird because we've bagged on Leonard Fournette for years and now he's just like, he's probably just good. The answer is probably that we were wrong and Jacksonville tainted him in a way that he has recovered from that.
Well, he had a good season, one good season in Jacksonville. Remember when he caught all those passes and like
70 something passes, 77 receptions, maybe 76 or something like that.
With Bortles under center, like that came out of nowhere.
Those were fun days.
Oh, it was great. It was great. Meanwhile, I blacked out for about a 5-day stretch, but I've awakened and somehow Matt Ryan is in Indianapolis and Marcus Mariota is now the quarterback of the Atlanta Falcons. Our crew covered the Ryan side of this on Monday's episode, so check that out. But let's look at this because we have to from the Falcons side of things. Kyle, do you think there's a path here for Marcus Mariota to be, let's say, a viable QB2 or streaming option with Arthur Smith coaching him in Atlanta?
Yeah, QB2 is not a particularly high bar to clear, but yeah, especially because of his rushing production. Like, it's, you know, you're not saying much, but we are not asking for much. He's not going to be drafted as a QB1, so you're just saying, can he clear the bar of where his ADP probably falls? He could. I think he mostly just gets there via rushing because I don't think this is going to be an incredibly explosive offense. Like, the line has issues. The receiving core literally doesn't exist. Like, they have, like, 4 employed receivers, and they're all practice squad players. So they're going to need to address that via the draft. It'll probably just be rookies, obviously. They're not going to have any established veteran talent. And Cordarrelle Patterson even kind of got misused down the stretch where he stopped being that hybrid weapon. So yeah. I have questions about the player usage, about the player talent. I really think if he clears the ADP bar that will be set for him, it'll be because of his rushing, which is pretty much, as we know, the cheat code. And people forget he's a really good rusher, was putting up like consistently like 500 yards. He can put up 500 yards on the ground in the season. That's not nothing. That means a lot for a quarterback who otherwise we're not that interested in. To me, though, I do feel like he has basically just been taken as the Jared Goff of this team. Good enough to let you see what talent you have. Like, if you had a truly atrocious quarterback, we probably wouldn't have gotten to see how good Amon-Ra St. Brown was. Goff is perfectly competent enough that a good player like Amon-Ra St. Brown can still get there. That's what we're going to see with like a Kyle Pitts or, you know, the rookie they bring in eventually. I hope to God it's a first round rookie, that he'll be good enough. Marcus Mariota will be good enough to get that guy the ball. And if he's good, he'll make do with it. But outside of that, I still think I'll probably be pretty flat on this offense.
I mean, who's he throwing to, you know, besides Pitts? I think that's the main concern. But the rushing is where it's at with Mariota. He had, in 2016, he had 60 rushing attempts in 15 games. That happened again in 2017. In 2018, he had 65 attempts in just 13 games. You know, so he's willing to take off from the pocket. Hopefully, the Falcons maybe can utilize that mobility in a positive way. Maybe get some design rushes for Mariota, who... seemed to be, and you know, not exactly a film grinder, but seemed to be a very aggressive rusher during his few games with the Raiders when he was brought in as a as a wildcat option for Derek Carr. So I have some hope that he can be useful in spots for fantasy. Overall, it's a bridge quarterback situation. You know, the Falcons signed him to a deal that is reportedly it's a 1-year deal with 2 years technically on it, but
second year's a team option that he probably doesn't play good enough to achieve.
Exactly. I mean, he would have to play really well in order to be starting for Atlanta next year. But Matt, as a longtime Falcons fan, I wanted to ask you, how are you feeling?
I feel very strange. Yeah. It feels like it's Nightmare Alley, basically. It's just kind of how I feel.
which Nightmare Alley is it though? Is it the sci-fi thriller? Is it
it's
the
Denny's.
Prequel, the tearjerker? It's the tearjerker. It is.
Yeah, it's the tearjerker. Sorting through a lot of feelings here.
This makes sense for the team though. Like they were not going to win with Matt Ryan. They certainly weren't going to win with Deshaun Watson because they were going to give up every asset they had to acquire him and leave him with a decrepit roster. Like, this is what you have to do. I think the Lions probably did things right where they didn't have the roster to win with Stafford. We saw that year in and year out. So they blow it all up and hopefully they run good in the draft. This was ultimately, I think, the right move by the Falcons. You want a quarterback who probably gets you to like Mariota's not elevating your already bad roster past 5 wins. He puts you in contention to get a good pick while still letting you test out the receivers you draft. This is the smart move. Like, I think more teams should be more comfortable being bad for a year or two.
I think it is too. And I'm not a huge fan of the let's try to kind of win and rebuild on the fly, because that's kind of a joke, right? You're fooling yourself. I guess just the thing, and I'm sure I'm very far from the first person to say this, obviously, but like, the Falcons kind of, I mean, the Falcons could have gotten more than a third rounder for Matt Ryan if they played this differently. So that's the aspect of it that's frustrating. But I want to ask about a point that Kyle brought up a minute ago, and that is, okay, we joke about the Falcons' weapons. It's not pretty. And in theory, I guess they could have a first-round receiver added in this draft.
They better. It would be incredible. Like, you're right. Yeah. They do have a lot of needs.
They need everything. They need literally everything. They need a quarterback now. They need edge rushers. They need offensive line help. They need literally everything. So I don't know what they're going to do. Second-round receiver maybe at worst, but they do still have Kyle Pitts and Cordarrelle Patterson, who they arguably don't know how to use or change their mind how to use. Danny, do you agree with Kyle that Mariota is going to be good enough to let those guys get there, whatever there is for them?
For Pitts, I would say probably, just because Pitts is, you know, although our expectations meant that Kyle Pitts, I should say my expectations meant that Kyle Pitts' rookie season was kind of disappointing. He still had a really good rookie season, and there's no reason to think that, you know, a second year blow up can't happen, even with Mariota under center. For Patterson though, and I don't know. I do have this sense, and I'm a CPAT truther from way back. Sure. Okay. Ask anyone. But you know, he wore down last year. And I actually remember seeing some quotes in the Atlanta media where Patterson's like, "Hey man, this running back thing's different. I don't know what to tell you. Like I'm getting beat up out there. This is not like playing receiver." And the team knew that. And then by week 13, 14, whatever, Arthur Smith was out there saying, we need to manage Patterson's workload. We can't really use him as an every down back. And that makes sense. You know, that makes sense according to his history and his usage. So I do feel like Patterson's on the way to being one of the more overdrafted players in 2022, unless they really carve out like a big receiving role for him.
I mean, they'd be smart to use him as a wide receiver lot more.
Oh, yeah, but, sure.
He looked good in that role plenty. But anyways, in other quarterback news, Jameis Winston has a new two-year, $28 million deal with the Saints. Kyle, I'm not sure too many of us will really be trying to talk ourselves into drafting Winston in two quarterback leagues this upcoming season. But, I mean, what does this mean for the New Orleans offense to you, big picture? Like, are you excited about drafting anyone with the Saints as part of the Saints offense this upcoming season?
Yeah, I think it was on a Twitter space. I don't remember, but I was talking with Karain about this. And you look at Winston's numbers last year. I mean, they were like, you know, he was small sample stuff, obviously, is part of the culprit for it. But like an 8% touchdown rate, cut down on his interceptions, I believe, is a career low interception rate, and a slightly below average sack rate as well. He was doing what we always envisioned the idealized Jameis Winston to do. The big awesome throws, the fun stuff, the touchdowns without any of the bad. The classic, I wish your strategy was to be more good more often and don't do the bad things. Don't have any of the drawbacks. We saw that last year with the caveat that they didn't throw that much. It's easy to pick your spots really well, to throw touchdowns, throw big plays when you are never really, you only put yourself in position to make the good plays. But that means the expense is like you don't take any risks. You have to take some risks. I think the fact they were so run heavy, one of the run heaviest teams in the league, even with Jameis Winston, tells us that they understood he was still this limited player. The way you take away his interceptions is you just don't throw that much, unfortunately. I think Crane was right, probably to the extent that they were run heavy with him. His efficiency is obviously literally, I think, an 8% touchdown rate. It is unsustainable. Even if he did fix some of his mistakes, the team has an identity clearly as a run first team. I don't think even getting Michael Thomas back will drastically shift things, although it does make things a little interesting, right? If they get Michael Thomas back, maybe they add, a more exciting receiver at any point in the draft would be ideal, hopefully earlier. Sure, their pass rate comes up, but they seem to have solidified themselves as a team that just wants to run the football. And we have Alvin Kamara, that is perfectly understandable, in a really good offensive line as well. So I think I could see myself stacking. I think I'd go either all in on them, saying in 10% of my best ball teams, I want a season where Jameis Winston gets that 5,000 yards. And it's a perfectly fine risk because we want to play not only for first in a 12-team league, but then leagues and leagues after that to, win the $1 million prize or whatever. But for the most part, most outcomes have them playing their run first style, which they've been successful with, backed by a good defense, and they're not an exciting fantasy team. I think there's a small tail end where Jameis Winston stays not as efficient, but efficient, and they recognize that. I mean, they paid him, it's not a ton of money because quarterbacks make a lot of money, but they paid him in a real sense, many millions of dollars. So I would hope they pass more. Do I think they really become even close to a pass first team? Probably not. It's probably something that, I have a few Jameis Winston, Michael Thomas, and hopefully a rookie stacks. Adam Trautman. Love to see a good Adam Trautman breakout. But in general, if you're just asking me if they are a fun, good fantasy offense, most of the time it's probably not.
You're still holding out for Troutman, and we will be until the year 2045. You know, Winston signing with New Orleans is I guess is fine for real football. Mm-hmm. For fantasy, it strikes me as boring. You know, he still had his issues last year. You know, in before he tore his ACL, you know, he had 14 touchdowns, and 3 interceptions, which is, you know, really nice change, obviously, from his Tampa days. But he was 28th in completion rate over expected. He had the 10th highest EPA per drop back in those games. There are still some signs that he can, you know, Winston can be managed, but only to an extent. And I think, you know, if the wheels came off with some injuries this year and they were forced to go pass heavy, it could be a major issue for the Saints. Now, from a fantasy standpoint, that might actually be fun.
The game I always think about with Winston from last year, and I don't want to put too much into one game, but his week one, 148 passing yards and 5 touchdowns on 20 attempts, just kind of sums up what we were talking about with how sort of somehow he produced, but it just didn't feel right at all times. Like,
yeah,
you know,
I covered that game for us and they were running the ball on like 3rd and 12.
Yeah.
They weren't even trying to score points in the second half.
Yeah. Good times there. And by the way, to the point you made, Kyle, it's so strange that we still are talking about Michael Thomas as like a hypothetical after what feels like 2 years, basically. I mean, is he even on your radar in terms of fantasy right now? Like, where is he on your radar? How far off it or on it is he?
Yeah, it's super interesting because we talk about this. This is sort of like the running back syndrome where like last year, I was really convinced that like Ezekiel Elliott, he's still the workhorse back for a really good Dallas team. And like, football is a very violent and aggressive sport that takes an extreme toll on your body. And we see it year in and year out. Last year's best player, 2 years ago's best player is just gone, like out of the league in time. And I'm not saying that is for sure a thing with Michael Thomas, but like, we cannot at all rule that out. So I definitely think he still is on the radar, especially because they have such a void of targets to fill. They just have no one else to throw to. They're very Falcons-esque, but with a Michael Thomas potentially in the waiting. So yeah, I think he has to be on the radar. Ironically, though, it doesn't really fit with what you would think Jameis Winston does. Jameis Winston was somewhat different last year with not the mistakes, but Michael Thomas, like literally nicknamed Slant Boy, is not what you would want with Jameis Winston. If Jameis Winston is fixing his style and conforming to the weapons he has, which is really just one other than like Alvin Kamara, yeah, you could still get an incredible, like high reception, good PPR, great PPR season for Michael Thomas. But like, I would probably not take him. What do you think? Like wide receiver, like 17, 18, 19, maybe is fair.
You're never going to get him there.
You don't think so?
No, I think he'll be going in the 10.
Yeah. He has such a name brand cachet that people just want to have faith, but it has been a considerable time since we've seen him be productive.
Yeah. I'm staying far away. I can't even imagine talking myself into that. What you're just talking about, Denny.
What? Oh, taking him at 10, yeah. Wide receiver 10 to 12.
Even when Kyle was saying 17, 18, 19, I was like, ooh, I don't know. So still a lot of good receivers there at that point.
I mean, people love remembering back to Michael Thomas, a million slant passes from Drew Brees. It's
sure. You know,
that's probably not walking through the door. I have to say, as the founding member, probably not the founding member, but one of the most outspoken Deontay Hardy advocates. And his name is Deontay Hardy now, not Deontay Harris. You may remember him as Harris, but he changed his last name this offseason. He's the downfield speed demon for New Orleans.
Sure.
Very efficient guy. Kind of exciting. I wrote him up a little bit in my wide receiver and review piece a couple weeks ago on the site. So if Winston is allowed to cut it loose a little bit, could be fun for Hardy.
All right. We have a few more topics to hit, a few more player moves. But first, we're going to take a quick break.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
The madness is upon us. Get an Edge Plus annual subscription now to unlock our college basketball DFS and betting tools with game predictions, player prop predictions, and more. Get ready to cut down the nets using promo code BRACKETS20. Plus, you'll get every tool for every sport with your Edge Plus subscription, including our new fantasy baseball draft guide powered by RotoWorld. Go to NBCSportsEdge.com/EdgePlus and use promo code BRACKETS20 at checkout to find your edge. Guys, we had some wide receiver news over the weekend. Robert Woods is headed to Tennessee, I'm told. Now, on the surface, Denny, this is a player surrounded by fantasy red flags. He's coming off a torn ACL. He's about to turn 30, and he's changing teams. Other than that, though, everything is completely fine. What is your outlook for Robert Woods in 2022?
Don't forget that he's on the run heaviest team in the history of any sport.
That's four.
You know, the pass rate over expected for Tennessee was, I believe, the lowest in the league last year and was consistently so. They don't pass ever. It doesn't matter if they're down by three scores, they're not going to pass. So they can support one fantasy relevant receiver, and that will be AJ Brown. And Robert Woods will not be fantasy relevant. And that's the end of that.
I hate to say it, but like, I can't really give much of a contrary opinion. Maybe I won't say he won't be fantasy relevant. We know that these Tennessee teams, while they don't pass a lot, they do have capability of throwing at very high touchdown rates. We've seen that consistently with Tannehill, but like, you're just praying that you get like the 9 touchdown season from Robert Woods, which like, he's a good red zone weapon. He's really good. Like everywhere. He's a good blocker. He is like surprisingly, I mean, if you look at his game logs, it might not surprise you, is a good rusher too, which is awesome. I love wide receivers that run the football, even though it's such a niche, dumb thing to like, but he's not going to be a giant target hog because they have that in AJ Brown. And even if he were, that doesn't always equate to a ton of targets because it's the Tennessee Titans. If you're drafting him, you're really just praying that his talent pushes him to 9 or 10 receiving touchdowns. It could happen, but like, I don't see him drawing a lot of targets. I'm never going to be in the business of counting for high efficiency just as the bar to clear. So I won't really be interested in him either.
We close that book pretty quickly. Danny, you got an additional comment though.
The only thing, I'm sure Robert Woods is a swell guy, by the way. I have nothing against him personally. The only path to him being like an every week fantasy starter is either you're playing in a 20-team league or AJ Brown struggles with injuries again. That's the other one.
Okay. I mean, overall, though, it sounds like this is the guy who in your home league, when someone takes him in the middle rounds, just based on his name, you're like fist pumping. Like you're pumped that someone made that pick.
Yeah, we forget that wide receivers, I know Denny mentioned this, but I just want to hit on it again. Wide receivers changing teams up until, what was 2 years ago, that Stephon Diggs and DeAndre Hopkins moved teams. Up until then, it was a death sentence. It meant you were done. Mm-hmm. We were not, smart people, at least, weren't drafting you. And then we got spoiled by two receivers in pretty unique situations. Like, it was just at the time we were starting to get players really just, like, forcing their hand to move stuff, especially with, like, Diggs just didn't want to play there anymore. But for the most part, players changing teams are changing teams because their previous team did not want them. And there's a reason they did not want them. You get to see a player every single day, practice, games, and you say, nope, let's ship them off. And for nothing, it's a 6th round pick, not this coming draft to the next draft. It was really just that we don't want to pay his salary. We want to give that to someone else. So that tells us a lot. That is information to work with, even if it doesn't come in the form of stats. And that's been the consistent thread up until like the Hopkins Diggs offseason, that the reason these players are changing teams is because their previous team didn't really have an interest in them. And that tells you a lot. So yeah, it's Robert Woods, like Denny said, sure he's a great guy. Just from the stats he's going to output, I will not be drafting.
Robert Woods in a past life played for the Bills. Jameson Crowder is now headed to the Bills on a 1-year deal. Now, we will talk about the Bills side of things in a minute because there are a lot of moving parts there among those wide receivers. But first, Kyle, arguably most importantly, does this portend the inevitable Elijah Moore breakout in New York? Was that happening anyway, even before Crowder left town?
I almost want to say, and I think I'd be in the minority of this, that it wasn't happening anyway, because the reason he had the flashes we saw is inexplicably because Mike White and Josh Johnson and Joe Flacco got under center. Like, his yards per target when catching passes or attempting to catch passes that were very often not on frame from Zach Wilson was atrocious. The reason we have good memories of the Elijah Moore rookie season is because he sometimes got the chance to play with other quarterbacks. Does that mean Zach Wilson's going to be as bad as he was last year in the upcoming season? No, it would be like a statistical anomaly to be that bad in back-to-back seasons. I think we'll be better, but it's not like we had this whole great season. It was a few flashy games that did not come with the quarterback that will be under center. I think really what this just means is, barring a new signing, or more importantly, probably a drafting, probably see more of like Braxton Berrios in the slot, who I like. Braxton Berrios, he's a really good returner, good with the ball in his hands. Like, wide receiver 5'6", though, it's still not that incredible. I don't know. I still think there's perfectly reasonable to say Zach Wilson will be better next year. I don't know if I'm going to be all in as like the market was when we got so much steam at the end of summer on Elijah Moore and Zach Wilson just being the cheapest, best QB1 wide receiver one stack you could find, right? I think if we get that kind of hype again, I'd probably lean back on a quarterback and wide receiver tandem, really, that was not good last year.
That would be tough to go 2 years in a row with going, hey, you know what? Zach Wilson and Elijah Moore are going to get it done this year. Like, it's my best ball teams can report that didn't work out the way we thought it would. My interns have been fired because of it. But yeah, I mean, Elijah Moore, you know, was really exciting when he was fully healthy, and he's going to have probably a lot more opportunity this coming season. Unfortunately, Joe Flacco won't be starting for the Jets.
Can we not hang our hats on week 13, guys? Zach Wilson starting, Elijah Moore, 12 targets, 6 catches, 77 yards, and a touchdown?
I do recall that. I recall a lot of meat left on that bone, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's only a 50% catch rate. I don't think that's a great yards per target either.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
You say 67?
Six for 77.
Oh, 77. So he almost might have cleared 8 yards of target. Oh, no, he didn't come close. 6.4. Not 6 yards of target is the end-all, be-all. I'm just saying. We need Zach Wilson to get better, right? Because I love Elijah Moore. I think we saw him when he got the ball in his hands. It was incredible. And Zach Wilson can get better, but that is a starting point for Elijah Moore to be good this year. Just has to happen.
And it was a 5-game stretch for Elijah Moore where he had 28 catches, 392 yards, 5 touchdowns, to refresh people's memory. And in fairness, 3 of those good games were not with Zach Wilson. The one not great game he had in there, or not even good game, was with Zach Wilson. And then he had the one I just mentioned with Zach Wilson. So, okay, thanks for bringing me down there, guys. I appreciate it.
Sorry about that.
Reality check. Let's look at the Buffalo side of this thing, though. So Crowder... maybe opens up more opportunity for Elijah Moore. Worried about the Zach Wilson thing. But going to Buffalo, I wonder how this complicates things. Obviously, Cole Beasley's gone. But Danny, I mean, do you worry at all about Crowder's arrival when it comes to Gabriel Davis, who last we saw was having just one of the greatest playoff receiving games ever, or Isaiah McKenzie, who we saw flash, I think, one time last season, that one explosive performance? Right. What do you make of Crowder arriving in Buffalo?
I don't think that they would have signed Crowder if they were all in on Isaiah McKenzie as an every down slot receiver. That's pretty clearly not going to happen now, barring a Crowder injury or something this offseason or in training camp. Crowder, I think, should be assumed to be the starting slot receiver. And the thing about Jameson Crowder, kind of like Leonard Fournette, not exciting, but gets it done. Like when he's afforded opportunity, when he's running a lot of routes, and when he's seeing targets. You know, which he should. I think he still can as the third option in this passing game, because it's such a pass heavy Buffalo offense. I think he could be kind of underrated, especially for what does Pat Daugherty call it? PPR scams.
Ponzi schemes.
Crowder's always been a PPR scam. I think he can continue that in Buffalo's pass heavy attack. I'm not excited about Crowder catching passes from Josh Allen.
I think I'm less excited, though. Like, these Josh Allen receivers or tight ends and running backs, like, will randomly just pop up with like 7 touchdown seasons. Like, I think McKenzie had like a 5 touchdown season 2 years ago. We've seen, like, you know, great tight end, like just random performances from even like the backup tight ends, just catching oddball touchdowns. That would be, to me, the path for redemption for Jamison Crowder is, again, the fluky touchdown season, which I think is, I talked about with Robert Woods. You have to pay way less for Jamison Crowder to get like a similar target role in terms of, yeah, sure, third in the totem pole. But as Denny said, like the pass happiest offense in terms of relative to expectation in the NFL, most likely. So you get to pay less by a lot for probably similar odds at a good touchdown season, even though, sure, like James Cross probably not good as good as Robert Woods, but is the gulf that massive and one of them gets Josh Allen? Like, yeah, I'd be perfectly fine like stacking up Josh Allen with, you know, a Gabe Davis and a Jamison Crowder. And I don't think this has any effect on Gabe Davis. I think Denny nailed it. This is specifically, I don't want to say an indictment, just the fact that, yeah, you're not going to get a full Isaiah McKenzie three down, you know, or every down roll, right? He's a special teams player too. He's a returner. So let him do that. Well, coming in as the team's fourth receiver, he was good in that role. He probably sticks in that role where Crowder ends up mixing in as the primary slot option.
Denny, last offseason, as I'm sure you remember, you became enamored of a certain Buffalo Bills receiver named Emmanuel Sanders. I'm wondering, I felt like I heard a glimmer there, a glint of intrigue from you where maybe we can maybe get that same excitement going for Jamison Crowder during this long offseason. Is it possible?
We're working on it. You know, I'm coming up with an 11-point plan on how to steam up Jamison Crowder as a sexy pick this summer. I'm kidding. He'll never be that. Just, you know, for the record, Manny Sanders was looking okay for a while, and then his legs kind of gave out. So
he had his moment. He had some moments. There were some moments there, and I could see the same thing happening for Jamison Crowder. Now, most of those in a standard fantasy league would happen on my bench with him on my bench. Right. But I think you know he could have some moments. Last topic here, guys. Rashad Penny, speaking of moments, is back with the Seahawks on a 1-year, $5.75 million deal. He, of course, had that monster finish to last season, 671 rushing yards and 6 touchdowns over his last 5 games. Kyle, obviously, the offensive environment in Seattle is way worse than it was. Looking at this thing, could any of last season's Rashad Penny glory carry over? Are we forgetting that ever happened? Did that even happen? Where are we with this whole thing?
It definitely happened, I think.
Okay.
I think it definitely almost certainly happened. It seems so surreal that a player who could be marred by injuries and even when healthy, not really put into a meaningful role, could break out in such a massive way late in the season. And he had like a record-setting efficiency, like crazy breakaway run rate numbers. Like I think like over 6 or at 6 yards per carry, which is like just unreal. Like Alvin Kamara doesn't do that, let alone Rashad Penny, who took 4 years to finally break out. I'm glad he got the bag. In terms of his production, how can you possibly bank on him being hyper-efficient on a team that just lost Russell Wilson, a team that's offensive line isn't that good? They also lost their starting right tackle. Like, or actually, he's visited the Broncos, but it does look like he'll sign there, I believe. So I just can't see a way that this team fosters an environment that is good for what is probably a regression candidate at the running back position.
Rashad Penny averaged more yards after contact in the final 6 weeks of the season than any other running back averaged yards per carry. Okay. Like that's out of control. You know, I mean, he's good. Like, and we always knew that he was good. It's just a matter of staying healthy and getting a decent role in that offense. There are a lot of obstacles to him becoming like an every week kind of fantasy player, including Chris Carson, who if he's back, you know, Pete Carroll loves Chris Carson. The organization loves Chris Carson. Michael Sean Duggar from The Athletic, who covers the Seahawks, has said a couple times this offseason, if Carson is back, you know, from the chronic neck injury that he had, expect him to be the presumed starter. Like, and that's something I don't like to hear that. Like, that doesn't make sense to me, but it is worth listening to and worth kind of filing away. So I do think Penny has some major issues in what will be, you know, probably one of the worst offenses in the NFL. I mean, the worst offenses in the NFL don't produce great running backs. That's just not the way it works.
And I mean, I think the Carson thing is real if he's healthy. Like that all sounds like valid info. But I mean, yeah, it's almost like you'd be okay taking a flyer on Penny if not for the offense. It's like too, you know, even if he gets his shot again, what will the offense even afford him? But he was the very definition of a league winner last year against all odds.
Yes.
We'll always have the memories.
We will. We will have those memories.
That's what it's about at the end of the day. For us, it's about things in the past. We just like living in those times.
It was the waiver wire picks we made along the way that we'll remember always, including Rashad Penny, the best running back in the NFL for 6 weeks.
On our way to the win in the 3-4 consolation game to nail down third place.
People say that, but wait, there's got to be some people who picked him up and rode him all the way to a title.
Oh, I'm sure.
It wasn't me. I just want to say it wasn't me.
did not happen for me with Rashad Penny either. All right, that is going to do it for us on this episode. Don't forget to subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you listen. Take a minute to rate and review us as well, and keep it tuned to the NBC Sports Edge Player News page powered by RotoWorld for all the off-season news you need. I want to say thanks to everyone for listening and for watching live. Stick around for our film review right after this. We're going to be reviewing every Best Picture contender in great detail. A couple hours should be an exciting time. Danny, Kyle, thank you guys. I will talk to you soon.
See you.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.